He's right in front of me, and I can honestly tell him that I'm going to knock him spark out. Leaping right hand by the Prince. Ooh. And a hard left. And Kelly's down for the third time.
Hello and welcome to Off The Brawl on Off The Ball. I'm Ronan Mullen. In studio as ever is Simon Maguire. Simon, how's life?
Ronan, how are you?
Not too bad. No Phil this week, but delighted to be joined again by former middleweight champion of the world, Andy Lee. How are things, Andy?
Good. Good to be here, lads.
Good to have you.
Yeah, good to be back in the hot seat.
It's taken a while for things to fall into place this year, but it seems the schedule's sort of taking shape a little bit now, doesn't it?
Yeah. The boxing's coming together. Well, big news yesterday with Fury and Eubank and the Gaelic fight coming up, and then just starting to get rolling a little bit. You know, the cogs are moving, and the year is starting to take shape with the schedule ahead.
Absolutely. And on today's show, we'll chat about that ever-changing landscape of the heavyweight division, as Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua show their cards. We'll also look ahead to Saturday's super middleweight derby between James DeGale and Chris Eubank Jr. That amidst news that Billy Joe Saunders is set to join the ranks at 168 pounds. We'll run through all the other talking points from around the world of boxing as well, but it's with the domestic scene that we start today, and Saturday marks one of the most anticipated dates on the Irish boxing calendar as the Irish League finals roll around again. Always a memorable day at the National Stadium, Andy.
It's one of the best nights of the year. Well, it's probably the biggest night of domestic. It is the biggest night of domestic boxing because there's not so many big pro shows anymore in Ireland, so this is like one of the highlights. I was at the quarterfinals and I was at the semi-finals last week, and we've had a couple of the best fights, I think, already, just the way the draw worked out, especially Michael Levin versus Gabriel Dusan was a fight worthy of being at an Olympics. You know, that was the standard of the fight, and it's a shame that they had to meet so early in the competition, and Dusan came out on top slightly. I think there was only probably one or two punches in it, maybe one punch in it, that separated the two fights. A lot of people had it from Nevin, but I thought Dusan just did enough, and he's going to fight Emma Brennan in the final from Glasnevin. This will be a good contest, but you'd favour Dusan. The only thing I'd say about Dusan now is that he's carrying an injury on his right knee. He wasn't moving as well.
He twisted it in sparring or something, did he?
Yeah, I spoke to his coach, Mike Monger, and he said it was touch and go whether we'd actually fight on Saturday night, so hopefully that's recovered for him. But it's all something that Emma Brennan might be able to capitalise on if he can make Dusan move and force him to move, you know.
Yeah, it's always tricky when these injuries are in the public domain. If your opponent knows about it, it's so well publicised.
Well, he didn't hide it. He had a big bandage on his knee, and you could really see he did well in front of the fight, but when he came out of the ring, he was hobbling a little bit, but the big fight of the night on Saturday night is Kieran Malloy versus Paddy Donovan. It's again, it'll be one of those fights that will be good enough to be in the Olympics, and the winner of this fight, you'd say you tipped him for a medal in Tokyo. Donovan's quite young, I think he's only 19, but he's super talented, super confident, and has so much ability. Like, he's quite an exciting prospect.
Yeah.
And the same can be said for Malloy. He's a little bit older, a little bit more mature. You'd favour Malloy in terms of the strength. He looks a stronger fighter. But I think Malloy probably boxed with himself in the previous two rounds. So he hasn't really impressed that much. But you can see that he always, when he has to step up and raise his game a little bit, within the fights, he has. And he's won his two fights well. It'll be one of the best welterweight finals in a long, long time, since probably James Moore versus Henry Coyle. So that was 2003. So this is one of the best welterweight finals. I think that fight alone is worth the admission fee, and should make you know, make anyone want to go, any casual fan want to go watch it.
And Donovan, you see his clips in the rounds on social media, unbelievable skill set. Mm-hmm. But two southpaws, and given that he's quite young, might it be tricky to face up against a fellow southpaw?
Yeah, well, he had a really tough fight. He fought Aidan Walsh last week from Monkstown in Antrim, and he's really... Walsh is a counterpuncher, but really negative and really tricky and tall and awkward. Mm-hmm. And I was really impressed how Donovan went about winning that fight, because it was a bit... Wasn't it, like... I don't even know if he was a favourite going into the fight. You might have favoured Walsh because he's older and taller and had all, and just the styles. But he went about the way he did it, and he boxed very well. He was aggressive, but also an aggressive and also counterpunching punch from an aggressive mindset. So, like, it could be like Malloy is probably the favourite. He's the current champion. He's older. He's been around a bit more. He's on the international scene at elite level a bit more. And he's definitely probably the harder puncher at this time. But where Donovan has the advantages is probably a little bit in speed, and there's not much pressure on him. And he'll come out there and he's up for it. And you've seen him, he's cocky, he's confident. And to me, he's a future, like he's a star for the future. I'm a big fan of watching these last two fights now, and I'm like really impressed with him.
Yeah, and you say the word star. There is an intangible thing about him. He's got that star quality.
He's got that X factor. He has it, yeah.
For sure. And just in terms of the elite finals themselves, did you enjoy it? Was it an enjoyable experience on the night when you fought?
Well, I boxed first time. I always had tough fights. You know, they're always tough fights, so that's the first and foremost. You enjoy it when it's over, yeah. And it's like this year, like when you think that Kirk Walker hasn't entered and Brandon Irvine and Joe Ward, those are huge names to be out of. You know, Joe Ward has an injury, but I'm not sure why the others didn't. Like, they may be injured as well, but to me, you would do everything you can to win to be national senior champion. It's or elite champion, as it's called now. It's like a feather in your cap, and you can walk around and say that. And I know Joe Ward is European champion, so maybe that trumps it all. Like, he's still probably classed the champion of Ireland if he's a champion of Europe. But I would love to see those guys fight and. I think there should be a lot more done, or try to get those guys to enter these competitions.
Yeah, and Simon, it's one of the rare occasions you get so much Irish sporting talent in one building. And as Andy said, anyone who's around Dublin or can watch Dun TG Carr, just it's a must see, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the atmosphere really ramps up, you know, especially the finals night, and I'm hoping to get down there myself as well. And it for people who the casual fan, it's just go down and enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy that night, you're not going to enjoy boxing, full stop. And then you can just walk away. But I guarantee you, if you go down, even halfway through, just get in and see what the atmosphere is like, you'll come back again. And that's, I think, the best thing you can say about it, really.
Yeah. And just to mark everyone's card quickly on the running order, on the men's side of things, at 49kg, it's Regan Buckley versus Sean Murray. At 52kg, we have Evan Metcalf against Adam Heshin. Christian Sakiso and Paddy Adams square off at 57kg. And in the 60kg division, Dominic Bradley versus David Oliver Joyce of Ballymun. At 63kg, it's James McGivern versus George Bates. Bates, of course, was the 60kg champion last year. Fair to say, as Andy said, one of the most hotly anticipated clashes of the night is Malloy against Donovan. Up at 75kg, Gabe Dawson against Emmett Brennan. Dawson, a world youth medalist, is, of course, beat defending Irish champ Michael Nevin in the quarterfinal. And then Brett McGinty to reach his first elite final, first time of asking. Perhaps some history to be made as Thomas O'Toole takes on Tommy Hyde at 81kg. Hyde's granduncle, also Tommy, won an elite belt at the same venue in 1946, beat Billy O'Mahony that night.
Son of Gary Hyde.
Yeah, the former trainer or manager of Guillermo Rigondo, Simon.
On the comeback trail.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. And then lastly to the big boys, Tony Brown against Kenneth Onkabua.
Just a word on Tony Brown. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, well, go ahead, no.
Another one has really impressed me. Like, he's been there and thereabouts, pushed Joe Ward very close a couple of years ago to 81kg, and lost to Kevin Hines in a previous year. But this year, stepped up to heavyweight. I would have seen him because I trained a little bit with him in St. Michael's and in Chicago. Had a good win the first night in the quarterfinals, but then beat Kirill Adyshev, last year's champion, on Saturday night, and a really assured, kind of polished performance. Boxed really well, and I think I know he's up against it. he's up against a strong puncher in Larry, but I think Tony Brown, he's been one of the standouts for me as well in the seniors.
Yeah, and then finally at the 91 plus kg limit, it's Dean Gardner against Martin Keenan of Rathkeel. So stacked their lineup, Andy.
It's a big night, and there's also a special feature. Keely Harrington's going to have international challenge match against the Swedish champion.
Yeah.
So it's a chance for people to come and see a newly crowned world champion in action.
Yeah, it's a weird old vibe for Kelly because she just basically got a walkover for her title, and it's kind of a homecoming for her, though, so she should be able to get up for it.
She should be able to get up for it with win. Be a huge crowd there. And I'm not sure, she did boxing last year at least, but, you know, becoming a world champion, it raises you and elevates you to a different level, you know, in your own self-esteem. So she should put on a good performance.
Yeah, and on the women's side of things, just to run through those quickly as well, at 48 kilos, it's Chloe Fleck against Donna Barr. The always entertaining Michaela Walsh of Monkstown goes for the 57 kilo crown versus Dervla Duffy. Michaela was over at the Commonwealth Games last year, so she missed out last year.
She's been on the Irish team for a good long time. For a while, yeah.
She's only 25, but it feels like she's been around forever, yeah. Another of our international stars is up at 64 kilos this year. Amy Broadhurst takes on Moira McGettigat of St Michael's. European under 22 champion just recently, Broadhurst, into her second successive finals at the Elites, beat Sean O'Callaghan to get there. She's full of talent as well, Amy.
Yeah, baby Canelo, as you call it, herself, was very unlucky in the Elites seniors, and you know, a lot of people saw, including myself, saw that she won the fight, but she's one for the futures. And it's good that her and Harrington are kind of keeping them apart from each other, that they both might want to medal.
And there's a friendly rivalry there, I think, in the long term.
It'll be interesting to come around like next year, the Olympic year, and when the qualifiers are up, because I think it's only the 60 kilogram category that actually is a weight category for the Olympics, so maybe Broadhurst might drop down, but it'll be interesting to see.
And she's very much got time on her side, obviously, and Simon, we remember at the Worlds, there was a lot of crying foul about the Irish fighters being hard done by, but she genuinely was one of the ones that was properly hard done by in that tournament.
There's that clip where she clips the Indian home fighter straight in the face with a left, and she gets deducted a point for it.
Yeah.
That's just like criminal. I mean,
that's amateur boxing, but it's boxing. Yeah. It's amateur boxing. Like, I hate to say this, and I know I'm here. I'm not here in any professional capacity, but I'm promoting Irish boxing.
Yeah.
But even in the seniors and the elites, over the last 2 weeks, I've seen a couple of decisions that I thought were insane. You know, I don't think there's any corruption in there. I just think there's a total lack.
Inept.
Yeah, they don't really know what to watch. You know, a lot of them, because it's an amateur sport, and these guys are just volunteers, and if they're available, they usually get the gig, you know. But there was a couple of decisions there over the last few weeks, and you were really questioning, like, you know.
And it's obviously not a perfect science, but is this the best scoring method for amateur boxing, do you think?
I don't know. At least with the computer scoring, there may have been some accountability, you know. And now it's...
And you knew what they were scoring.
When it was, and you could see it on the screen.
Yeah.
Now it's hard to see, because I think they're caught between... The call between the old system and the new system in terms of, do you score just the punches or do you score aggression? If someone's boxing in a counter-punching style moving, how do you... It depends on the preference of the actual judge and what they like.
Would you recommend former amateurs consider taking up judging
in a
part-time capacity, as long as it's obviously paid?
It's always easy. It always helps if you've done a certain thing, you know. If you've been in there and done it, even in terms of, reporting on boxing or watching it or having an opinion about it, it always helps. And whatever is no discredit to you guys, we can get you in the ring, I think it always helps. And
if you look at Alan Rowland, who was a former rugby player turned referee, he was probably considered one of the top two when he was reffing, and it was because he'd played scrum half for 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, 10 years, whatever it was, and he came through then and went on to referee. So maybe it's something that the IABA should look at in terms of getting more former guys.
It's a huge commitment to your time, and you know, you have to sacrifice a lot of your time and energy. So,
but then long term, if you have guys and girls judging the fights right, our better fighters will be going through and going on. But then again, you have amateur guys scoring then at the Olympic level.
Yeah. But the thing is, you have to get to the Olympic, to be an Olympic judge, you have to pass a certain criteria and you become like a star referee, you know, or a star judge. And there's guys who are like three star referees and judges. And there's three of them in Ireland now. But they're not allowed to officiate in the national elites because they're like three star judges.
Right.
That was one of Pat Ryan's big gripes after the fight between Dusan and Nevin. That, why aren't these guys judging this fight? This is an international standard fight. And they felt agreed, they thought they'd won the fight. I spoke to Michael Neville last week, he just kind of shrugged it off, you know. But when you have, you know...
So are you saying...
When you have, when you're in the amateur game and you have decisions like that going against you, you'll see, then you can see why these lads are turning pro. Younger than they should, or, you know, before they're ready. Because, if you're not getting a fair shake, then you... Why should you put your time and energy in it? You become disheartened, disillusioned with the sport.
What you're saying is we have three top qualified referees and judges, and they can't...
Yeah, I don't sure what the stipulation... Maybe that's because they are three-star, they're on the international standard now, that they can only do internationals. I didn't ask Pat the reason why they can't, but he was complaining to me that these guys should be refereeing this fight,
yeah,
but they're not allowed to enter into the...
We can follow up with... the Irish Association, and we get back to the listeners next week.
Absolutely. Just on the last couple of fights on that card, great fight at welterweight. Christina Desmond takes on reigning champion Grainne Walsh, and that's a really high class matchup. Desmond, the European elite bronze medalist, obviously, and takes on the defending champion. Walsh was brilliant last year on the night. I think she was voted best fighter of the night, so she'd be expecting to go for three in a row.
These are all like, even though you can probably, like in a couple of them, you'll see a clear favourite, but the trust me, it's the senior final night, like it's the elite final night. They're all going to be contested. Like they're all going to have a will and a want to win. So, I think across the card, they're all competitive fights.
Yeah, and the last couple, 75 kilos, Aoife O'Rourke of Castlereagh against Shane O'Neill of Athlone, and then at 80 kilos, it's Leona Hulin against Lisa Brown. I remember speaking to Grainne Walsh before the fight last year, Simon. She was just talking about the thing that gets always brought up, they're probably sick of being asked about it, but the Katie Taylor effect on this growth of women's boxing. And it's plain to see, given the quality of that card, that a lot of the girls, given their ages, have been inspired by Katie, and this sort of bred this new generation.
Well, I mean, how can you... Like, Katie's career is stamped all over female amateur boxing, from getting it into the Olympics. The fact that there's only three weight classes... I mean, obviously there's a... If you add another female weight class, you take one of the male weight classes away. I don't know why that's the way it is. That just needs to be changed. And I don't understand the numbers or the metrics behind that. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, of course. I mean, you look at the 20 by 20 campaign now, and the can't see, can't be kind of attitude. And Katie was the first one to break through. And look at what's coming behind her now.
Mm. And we'll reflect on all the highlights from that show next week. First bell on Saturday is at 5:45, so get down there and lend your support. Always a great night. And if you can't make it, as I said, TG Cahir is the next best thing. Speaking of which, and sticking with the domestic scene, we switched to the pro side of the street now. Last Friday saw a significant stride for paid fighters in Ireland as Assassin Promotions and Boxing Ireland formalised their link up with the broadcaster. Big turnout in the day, and Simon was there. Good to see the buzz back, Simon.
Yeah, I think so. And it's, like as Leonard Gunning said, that they're trying to build a pro scene in Ireland from the bottom up.
Mm.
And like every now and again, a fighter would break through from elite level. But if they lost, there'd be no base for them to drop back into. It would just be into the abyss, you know. And yeah, no, I think what they're doing is exciting. They're giving a lot of very young professionals an opportunity to see if they can go on and do it. And the fact that you have two rival promotions coming together could be something that maybe the heavyweight division might learn from in America. But, you know, it's an exciting time. And the fact that TG Cahir, you know, are getting behind us, they deserve a lot of credit for rolling the dice in this one.
Mm.
And you saw what happened with the Castle Bar card, how exciting it was, and they want to build on from that.
Yeah, and speaking of Leonard Gunning, Simon caught up with himself, Kevin Byrne, and headliner of this show, Eric Donovan.
It's great to see a collaboration because Assassin Promotions have brought a lot of value to Irish boxing in terms of bringing TV. TJ Cahir is massive, huge audience getting interested in boxing. Leonard and Boxing Ireland have brought the most competitive fights in Ireland over the last two or three years. They've had year-on-year fight of the year, and probably the most enjoyable shows to attend for a boxing fan. So put them together, I think you're getting a lot of the style and substance all put together. And I think that's what you can offer fans on this night.
And that's why we mesh so well together. Like we, like I said on the top table, we, our ethos was building a scene, building a professional boxing scene. And there wasn't one. There never has been one. This is the first time ever there's been a scene. There's been professional boxing, but there's never been a scene where people were able to start at the bottom level and work their way up the ladder. It's always been, they've got to start, it's come from the amateurs, and they've turned pro. So our ethos was, give guys at a lower level an opportunity to prove themselves and build themselves up and up the tiers until they get to a TV fight. It's taken 3 or 4 years, but we're here now. And it's a great platform.
Like you're saying at the top table, you had a vision to, at the start, to build this basically Irish boxing model that wasn't based on someone coming out of high performance as an elite champion and going on to become professional. I thought you were a bit crazy at the time. Your vision has been kind of vindicated now. You see the amount of new pros you have in Ireland. It must feel good to show up a few people. But no, I thought you were a bit crazy as well at the time. A lot of people criticised boxers who weren't at the top level turning professional. Yeah. And now they're sometimes the most enjoyable fights to watch.
Well, that's exactly what I thought. Because I know what I liked. Yeah, and I wanted to see Irish fellas fighting Irish fellas rather than a really good fella like fighting an Argentinian with a pumped up record that nobody really knew about, but it looked good on paper. But you can't really get engaged with that. Plus, you look at guys there today, they're really up for these fights, you know, and I think that'll draw in the fans. And especially on TG4, people will get to know these guys, they'll get to know the personalities, and even if they lose, they can come back again. They've got a bit of TV exposure. Let's pump them up, and they can come back again, and the other guys, they can move up that level. So it's all about moving up that level. And then the thing is, if one of those gets beat, the scene isn't dead, because that's what always happens. Bernard Dunne gets beat, it's no more scene. Paul McCluskey gets beat, there's no more scene. You know, it's always been, we've been waiting for that big bubble, and then it bursts, and we're back to zero. That's what we want to avoid.
You saw McAfee fight in Good Counsel last year. What did you think of him?
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant fight, Simon. He boxed Colin O'Donovan, and it was a real classic fight. It really was. Small room show. A small hall show, and just absolutely had every fan on the edge of their seat. And I was given the honour of handing the belt to the winner as well. So I presented Stephen McAfee his BUI Celtic Super Featherweight belt. I'm delighted to get the opportunity to fight him for the Irish title. It's a great opportunity for both of us. And the winner will kick on. I'm actually just becoming more and more aware of the difficulty of it. As an amateur and a top amateur, you can think, I'll have a crack off that. I fancy my chances there. But when you get into tough professional sparring sessions that are going on for 6, 8, and 10 rounds, you start to realise that this is no walk in the park. This is a very, very tough sport, and it's a hurtful sport. And if you don't prepare, and if you don't follow your advice, coach's advice properly, you could get seriously hurt.
There you have it, Eric Donovan, who will top that as part of an Irish doubleheader at the National Stadium next month. Television, Andy, was always going to be a key component of any sort of revival in the pro game in Ireland, and it's good to see TG Carr getting behind them, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good to see. It's somewhat like, I can remember in the days when I fought here in RT, just the small benefits that you don't really think about, like just walking down the street and people saying, oh, I saw your fight, you know, and a little pep it gives you. But it also, boxing has always generated huge numbers in terms of viewing figures and stuff, so there's... It makes good sense to me to have fights on TV. People want to watch it. Sit in on a Saturday night. If you're not going out, what are you going to do? You're going to watch the boxing, especially if it's on free terrestrial TV. But it's a good card, and they are competitively stacked. You know, you have Victor Rabbi on there and a couple of others. So it's good to see. It's good to see Eric and Stephen McPhee. They know each other well. They had sparred each other. When I was training Eric for that one fight, helping him out, we sparred with Stephen, and I tell you, it was close. I don't know how to surmise it, but
competitive.
It was nip and tuck, yeah. And what he lacks in his technical ability, McPhee, he makes up for in kind of aggression and tenacity. So Eric will have to be at his best to win the fight, you know. So, and like you can hear when you hear him speak, McPhee, that he kind of fancies it. He's kind of quietly confident. So Eric will have to. It is a potential banana skin for Eric.
Yeah, I agree. I thought at the presser, Stephen was delighted with the opportunity. And he wasn't saying anything. He was very respectful, but you could tell that he was like gunning for Eric, and the same for Eric. He's not I spoke to him there, and he was, he wasn't thinking about European titles or anything like that. He goes, "I need this one," and then this is the platform. And he wasn't looking past it or anything like that. So I didn't realise they'd sparred together until you said it there, and that just adds extra spice to it, I think.
It does, yeah, and I'm sure they'd both be thinking about it constantly, that one sparring session. It was in the stadium, and they went at it for, I think it was maybe 6 rounds, and
brilliant.
It was a competitive spar. So they've had a little preview of each other, and, if anything, McPhee has improved since then, because he's been active, where Eric has kind of stalled a little bit. He's coming off a long injury, a long layoff, and he's working with a new coach, Kennedy Egan, now. So it'll be interesting to see what that brings. How's he going to box and what kind of style of tactics he's going to employ. So, it will be. Eric is probably slightly favoured with his experience from the amateurs and his kind of quality. But it is a tough fight for him.
And I think, Simon, the Ray Moilette fight at the end of the year showed the appetites there for boxing, even in a losing effort. That fight seemed to capture the imagination, didn't it?
Yeah, well, it was a raucous atmosphere of, 2,000 people, and I think the viewing figures came in at 250,000. And that's significant for TG Carr boxing, And I think that's why, I don't want to speak for TG Carr, but I'd imagine that's one of the reasons why they've kicked on now and are going to build on the success of that fight night.
And 17 fights in all have been announced for that bill. The two Irish title fights, as we mentioned, and a Celtic title fight as well.
The co-main between Victor Rabbi and Jake Hanna is going to be a barn burner as well, I think.
Yeah.
A clash of styles, and that could well steal the show.
Absolutely. And fresh from signing that American link-up, Dylan Moran's also going to be on the card, God willing, because he has a fight before that, but hopefully he should be there as well.
He does. I spoke to him as well, and he's just focused on the American fight at the moment because it's such a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
And he's gone into that now as 8-0, and to get a platform in America, for such a young Irish guy is huge. And he just said he's delighted to be on the card, but he's delighted to be on the March 30th card, but he's not looking past the chance he has in America.
Yeah.
So We'll talk to him in a couple of weeks before he goes out to the States, and we'll see where he's at.
Absolutely. And just to stick with the Irish pro scene for a second, Johnny Stapleton was reporting that it looks like a compromise might be reached for Dennis Hogan and Jaime Munguia. That fight was being, there was talk of it being in Australia, talk of it being in Mexico, but it looks like it's going to land somewhere in America, and both sides seem happy with that. So Johnny's reckoning that should be agreed sometime this week. So that'd be a great opportunity for Dennis on a big platform, Golden Boy show.
Well, I heard about going back and forth. I was fearing the worst that it might fall down. Moniga is a big light middle, so there's been talks about him moving up to middleweight already. So I'm glad if they can get the fight sorted out. It'll be huge for Dennis. Yeah, huge achievement just to be in there fighting for a world title after where he's come from. So
yeah,
who knows? And he's got a chance.
And we saw Munguia, most recently, blew Liam Smith away. Mm. Liam Smith's a handy enough operator, so it shows Munguia's got power in both hands.
Didn't look that good in his last fight now. He kind of failed, but I'd say I can see him having a lot of weight issues. And the longer it goes, the worse he's going to suffer from that.
Yeah.
Because he's such a big, kind of hairy, raw-bone guy. But he is a powerful guy. He is strong. Especially when you think who he's beaten, Saddam Ali.
Yeah.
That was an upset. You can even say Liam Smith was an upset, in some way. And Dennis is going to have to be at his best to do anything with him,
Yeah. I'd say that should be the first half of the year, so looking forward to that one as well. A few Irish world title fights on the horizon. We turn now to the international scene and the endless drama of the heavyweight division. Anthony Joshua's April date is in the dust now, the Londoner instead heading across the Atlantic for a June meeting with Jarrell Miller. In somewhat more surprising news, Tyson Fury's next move has also been confirmed, albeit outside the ring. The lineal champion has taken the surprising step of signing a co-promotional agreement with Top Rank and ESPN, scuppering any easy route to a potential rematch with Deontay Wilder. Here's Fury discussing the thought process behind his move with Max Kellerman.
It was no secret that I wanted to fight in America from now on. And what better station to pick than the biggest station in the US? The most exposure, and I believe I'll get the biggest and best fights available.
So it didn't come down to just a money situation? You had your mind on what best way to enter kind of American popular sports culture?
100%, you know. ESPN has the biggest amount of viewers out of all the sports networks in the world. And I want to broadcast myself in the United States, so every British actor, singer, dancer, performer, sportsman, if they want to make it big time, they've got to go crack America. And that is this is the first step on my journey.
Tyson, I consider you, I don't think lineal championships can be lost other than in the ring. But you were away from the ring for so long, even Ring Magazine that bestows those kind of championships withdrew recognition. Do you consider yourself the heavyweight champion of the world?
1,000,000%. You can't lose a lineal championship unless you retire for good or get beaten in the ring. Even Ring Magazine still recognised me as a lineal heavyweight champion, and they took the belt from me because it was inactive for so long, which was understandable, really. So I'm still a lineal heavyweight champion. I should be the WBC heavyweight champion, but that's another topic for another day. And everybody knows the truth, so it's a big adventure and a big story for me now to start this next chapter with ESPN and Top Rank, and I'm looking forward to the journey.
Tyson, last time we saw you in the ring, you were looking up at the ring lights. I swore you were done, 12th round of a title fight, and somehow, you were way up in the fight, in my opinion, somehow you picked yourself off the deck and finished the fight. How'd you do it?
I only did, Max, what all great champions do, and that's get up off the floor and win. I rose to my feet when I was on the brink of defeat. I rose like a phoenix from the ashes. I had a lot of weight to carry, had a lot of points to prove, and I had a lot of hope to give to people who were suffering with mental health problems. And I wanted to show more than anything, more than a boxing contest, that against all odds, anybody can come back and do anything they desire. And I proved that on the night.
Tyson Fury there, who's believed to have signed a 5-fight deal worth a reported £80 million. Whether any of those 5 fights will be Wilder or Joshua remains to be seen. I know Fury says he believes the deal will make a rematch with Wilder more makeable. It's hard to see any logic in that, really, isn't it?
Yeah, there's none in what he's saying. Like, Top Rank have a history of keeping fights in-house. Again, not to be bringing up Manny Pacquiao on every podcast, but I mean, he fought, Timothy Bradley 3 times, Joshua Clatty, Margarito.
Marquez 4 times.
Yeah, well, they were all good fights by the third one. But, you know, so Bob Arum is very kind of strategic in how he does things. And you look at even Terence Crawford in the welterweight, yeah. You know, he's kind of swimming in an ocean all alone in the Top Rank pool. I think there's enough money on the table for the Wilder-Fury rematch, but it just makes negotiations that bit more difficult. You look how long it took Showtime and HBO to come together for Pacquiao and Mayweather, and yeah, it just muddies the waters that don't need to be muddied. It was a simple rematch, let's get it done, and now we're kind of ugh.
Yeah, and Andy, we were chatting at the weekend, it seemed that fight was all but done, the Wilder-Fury rematch, and it's kind of taken everybody by surprise, this deal, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's come out of the blue. Be interesting to see if Showtime have the option of a rematch, you know, if they have the rights. Sometimes in a TV contract, that's kind of stipulated that there'll be, if there is a rematch, so we have the first right, or the first right of refusal. But it should come down to, in the ideal world, and has happened before, that whoever offers the most money for the fight will get it.
Yeah.
Now, on a separate issue, there's been a purse bid that's been delayed twice for the fight, but from the WBC, who sanctioned an immediate rematch. They postponed the purse bids because they said that both sides were close to reaching the deal. Shelly Funchal said last night that he's going to speak to Frank Warren immediately and try to get the fight on. From reading in between the lines, I don't see the fight happening.
No,
I see in a way, Tyson Fury's probably been smart and looking after his own career. He's had these hard fights. He's probably thinking, I'll get well paid, I'll get $10 million or whatever it may be, and I'll fight somebody who's never going to challenge me, not even going to be a threat.
Yeah.
You know, and that's well within his rights, and it's probably a good
terms of career move for him. From the fans' point of view, we want to see him fight Wilder, we want to see him fight Joshua, but from his own point of view, in terms of his health and his financial future, that's probably the best move for him. And I just, the way he was speaking yesterday led me to believe that that's the way it's going to go.
Mm.
But when you look at it, the heavyweight division at the moment, there is no real challenges out there. You know, they can't really sell these fights. If they do sell them, they're not going to be pay-per-view because, you know, once Miller and Joshua's out of the way, Povetkin's gone, you know, you got Pulev, he could challenge one of them, but he's kind of tainted as well, isn't he? You know, he's not a star, you know, he's not a big name. There's a lack of names and a lack of big fighters. Outside of the big three, Dillian White is the one who would challenge any of them and generate pay-per-view, but that's basically it, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Everyone else has been is gone.
And Joseph Parker has quickly sort of turned into a gatekeeper. He gets brought up as an opponent more than a proper champion these days. So.
The thing about Fury and doing this deal is, even like, for Fury, he's been the away opponent in going against Klitschko in his first challenge. And his second challenge, he's been the opponent, the away opponent. And to have a promoter like Top Rank behind you, having that kind of strategic power in America, will give him so much strength coming to the negotiating table, but also if they win the rights to the fight, there's so many more benefits to having your promoter promote the fight or being in a co-promotion, a strong co-promotion with the other promoter. In terms of, like, just say when he went to the Klitschko, when he went to Germany, when he went to fight Wilder, everything would have been dictated to him. Even small, down to small things like the fight schedule, like where you got to be, when you got to be. And a lot of the times those things are told, you're being told those things very late in the day. You know, like, within the space of 2 hours, okay, you've got to go do an interview over here. And you might have a training schedule, you might have just relaxation time or going to meet your family, but you're all of a sudden you're upset because, and these things are done purposely. When you're fighting and you're with your own opponent, those things are all laid out well in advance and you know exactly, and you're doing those to the other opponent, to the other fella, you know, to upset him. So,
Who did you mess around with, Andy?
We didn't mess around. I didn't mess around. I got messed around a few times, but you have to be careful to guardship in those things and anticipate those moves. Like, you know, putting the opponent in the hotel room above the nightclub in the hotel, you know, that kind of thing, so they don't get any sleep the night before the fight. And just small little things.
So from a bargaining position, it's right for Fury.
It gives him some strength, yeah.
From a fan point of view, it could
be. From our point of view, from watching the fights, wanting these fights to happen, especially when it seemed like, and I would have gotten a few reports from people who know Fury pretty well over the last few weeks, as we said over the weekend, this is going to happen, this fight's being announced. Like my brother had pre-booked flights and held flights on different dates because it kept looking like it was going to happen, but now it's not happening. But there is still a chance, but I think it'll have to be crazy money. But it is there. Like you said, it is there for that fight.
It did. I mean, it sold, off the top of my head, I think it was about 300,000 pay-per-view.
Yeah, 325, I think, yeah. Which is big numbers, you know.
It is. And considering how...
Well, it was $70,
It was Wilder's first pay-per-view as well.
And considering then how well it went down and how dramatic it was.
The last round, it's going to go through the roof, and especially that both of them have been on Joe Rogan now. They're both huge, you know what I mean? Mm. And
like, if they just go 50-50 split, let's keep it nice and simple. You know, that's just us hoping.
And on a fighting point of view, both guys will believe they can win.
Yeah.
Both guys will believe they can win from that fight because Wilder had the knockdowns. He'll see a lot of ways he can improve because he didn't box well. Fury has been in the gym ever since. If anything, he's improved. He's fitter now. He'll be more be able to focus longer in those rounds and maintain that kind of boxing longer. So both guys will see ways in which they can win. And also, I think it was a big factor was that Wilder came in so light. He only weighed 218. You know, that's he's barely a heavyweight. You know what I mean? Could go up against Fury, who was like 254. That's a huge, a huge weight disparity.
When you say it like that, actually, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So that's huge, you know what I mean? And I think Wilder will come in heavier, Fury will come in lighter, fitter, and both guys will see ways they can win the fight.
Brilliant. Let's make it happen.
Let's get it on.
The numbers are actually quite interesting because even the number you quoted there, you can times that by 10 or 100, the amount of time people have seen the last round because it was all over Twitter the next day. And as Andy mentioned, Joe Rogan, you know, the thing has grown and grown. You're like, that both men are at an all-time high in terms of popularity, so it'd be a shame if they didn't capitalize on it. I have to take your hat off to Frank Warren as well, in fairness. Like, it's quite a deal to secure. He says it's one of the biggest deals ever for a British sportsman in America, and it's hard to argue with that. Mm. Bob Arum said this is a generational heavyweight at the peak of his powers, and again, it's hard to disagree. But as just to go back to my previous point, it feels like it's a two-way street with Wilder and Fury. Fury's popularity is kind of codependent with Wilder and vice versa. And we've said on previous podcasts that often boxers like Fury are reliant on their dance partner, who they're fighting, to look good. And do you think Fury, in the way he typically fights, is going to win over your casual American sports fan?
He'll have to start knocking people out.
Yeah.
He will have to start knocking people out. And I think he probably could have done that in the two fight. Well, he did it in his comeback fight, in the fight previous to that. What was the guy's name? The German guy. But he kind of just took him around, went to 10 rounds with him or 12 rounds with him, and he could have stopped him, but he didn't. Yeah, he chose to take the rounds. But he will have to start knocking people out, because in America, that's currency. That's what it means. They want the explosiveness. And he don't have to do it in the first round or even after the sixth round, but he has to do it in the 12 rounds and get the knockout. Mm. But you have to, on what you said, like, you have to kind of say Frank Warren is back, you know? He's back from the abyss, hasn't he? You know,
yeah, like, look at his stable. It's impressive, isn't it?
There's an argument to say that it's a better stable than Matchroom at the moment. Like, when you think that where he was, you know, fighting in Box Nation, like, had to generate his own channel. The fighters were, like, jumping ship, you know, like rats off a sinking ship. And all of a sudden, he's kind of built himself back up from the ground. And they have a strong stable of fighters. When you look at the pay-per-view fighters they have, Warrington, Frampton, Billy Joe Saunders, Tyson Fury, Anthony Yard, slightly maybe Dubois going to be again. And you look at Matchroom at the moment, they have really good fighters in terms of Josh Kelly, Ryan Burnett, and good fighters right away. Those young Olympians who turned Boatsy, O'Coley, Cardle, but Cardina, I mean. But when you look at the pay-per-view outside of Anthony Joshua, there's not much, is there? You know, there's not really many.
Yeah, it's kind of dependent on these supercards or Dillian White's
well,
got
Dillian
a couple of
Dillian White, yeah. But outside of that, there's not.
No, it was only yesterday looking at that press conference and you see the pillars with all the different fighters, it's Warrington, Frampton, etc. And you're like, he's really put something together
Liam
here.
Liam Williams is one you might could see winning the world title too.
Yeah, he's handy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's really impressed me. He's come back from his loss against Smith really well.
It's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. Thankfully, with the Wilder Fury situation, the WBC, as Andy said, they're putting the pressure on a little bit, so there will be an end point to this. It's not going to drag
on
and on.
Some talk yesterday that if they don't, title may come vacant if Wilder doesn't defend against Fury.
Yeah,
and then they'll put it up for Anthony Joshua to fight against Miller. So that would be they would totally shoot themselves in the foot if that was to happen, you know? Mm. That Joshua would end up with all the belts and then they would be the ones who are kind of out in the cold.
Mm. Yeah, didn't I say that? Isn't Dillian White now fighting for the mandatory position?
Yeah.
Himself in Brazil.
Yes.
For the interim title, yeah.
How many mandatories and eliminators that guy have to win before someone gives him a world title fight?
Well, did you see the back and front? The back and forth he had with Eddie Hearn? About
yeah, I see that. Yeah. But he was right too, wasn't he?
Yeah. You have to kind of admire him for how he handled it.
Like, and Brazil is not an easy fight. He's a big, big guy, you know. He's not an easy fight. He's a marauding kind of guy. He kind of takes his time, but he's big, you know.
Former American football player.
Yeah,
big. Long.
And that's the thing when you look at Joshua Miller. He's a huge guy. Like, you fancy, and Joshua's big, but he's bigger in a different way. Like, he regularly comes in at 350 pounds, you know, 325 pounds, Miller. He's huge. That's huge. 300 and something, it's like, huge. You know, that's huge. And, like, he can handle himself. Like, he was a guy I would have trained a bit with. He would have been in a lot of the Klitschko camps as a sparring partner. And not that he would have held his own. Like, he was never like... Vadim would have won every spar, hands down. But he was always in there. You know, he was in there and he was punching and he was taking punches and he was giving back. Not as much as he was getting, but he was also always giving back. And to do that against Vladimir in those years, in 08, 09, 2010, you have to be good. And how much he's come on since then. So
And like, he's going to talk smack, and he maybe get inside, you know, he's going to get inside Joshua's head a little bit. So it'll be interesting.
I give him a very good shot in that. I mean, people kind of, because his name is Big Baby, kind of people kind of laugh at him. But I don't think that's the walk in the park that people, for Joshua, that people think it's going to be.
If he can get past a few rounds, you know, if he doesn't just walk onto a big right hand early, because he might
flatten him.
Like, Joshua might just flatten him with a big right hand, you know, because he's...
He's got a great engine for a big man.
Yeah, and if he can get put his weight on Joshua and kind of get him into that kind of physical fight, that's hard to say that, because Joshua's such a specimen himself, but if he can get make it an ugly fight early and drag him out, then who knows?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to let Joshua display how good he is or what how he wants. I think it's going to be an awkward, ugly fight from the off.
Yeah. And it's, from a promotional point of view, it's perfect. It's a dream for Matchroom because he's a mouthy New Yorker, old-style New Yorker, and it's kind of one of those historical things that happens. You saw with Amir Khan, went to fight Paulie in his debut in America, you know, a winnable fight against a slightly off-colour champion. You know, someone was kind of on the way down at that point. And then you had, going back a bit further, Nassim Hammond against Kevin Kelly, slightly faded champion, but talked a great game and produced a great fight. So I'm sure they're hoping for something similar. It looks like Madison Square Garden's going to sell out if the pre-sales are written to go by. So that'd be a hell of a statement to sell out MSG on your American debut, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of mentioned a few times that Joshua has to go to the States if he wants to kind of cement his legacy at heavyweight rather than just, you know, fight guys in Wembley the whole time. And where better to set up than MSG, you know?
And you mentioned... Wembley, and a lot of people would have booked their hotels for April 13th because that was the date, but there is some world title action that weekend at Wembley, albeit at the arena. Billy Joe Saunders is going to fight for the vacant WBO super middleweight title. That kind of came out of nowhere as well, Andy, didn't it?
Yeah, well, it seems like Frank Warren's gone out of his way to kind of not rub salt in the wound, but you know, just to stick a middle finger up or just get one over any hand in any way he can. It did come out of the blue, but it was muted before for a while that he would move up to super middleweight, Billy Joe Saunders, and he's got to fight to go up and fight immediately for the super middleweight title, and he can always come down.
Yeah.
So again, it's another masterstroke by Frank Warren, isn't it? You know, he gets a lot of stick, and he rubs people up a lot of the wrong way, but he's looking after his fighters at the moment, and you have to respect that, you know.
Like, Saunders never been renowned as a big puncher throughout his career, but like, those skills will probably carry up to 168, and it's not the deepest pool in comparison to the middleweight division, which is stacked at the moment.
No, it's probably a good time to be a super middleweight, you know, compared to years ago when you had the likes of Froch and Ward and all those guys. So, and if you're a belt holder, then you kind of, and you know, he's seen that Canelo's fought at super middleweight, so maybe that'll be something there for him, you know.
I think that with him moving up, doesn't it open up for Triple G to be the mandatory for Andrade?
He's been named the mandatory, yeah.
So, like, we're kind of waiting to see what Golovkin does next. He's kind of, since the loss, he's just been...
dragging that out a little bit now.
Mm. Yeah, just tell us what you're doing.
There were a lot of reports that he would sign with DAZN or... it remains to be seen, you know, I don't know. And there was some reports about him spitting from his manager, Tom Loeffler, and stuff like that, and then Tom was quick to shut them down. But I think he's still a huge name, you know, he's still a huge name, and the rest won't do him any harm.
No.
Once he gets his house and order, he's probably looking at the Canelo money that, you know, and thinking, well, I deserve the same. He probably, you know, he feels that he's won both fights. He said that before. And so why don't I get the same money? So if he's not, that's probably where the sticking point is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's probably the right time for him to wait it out as much as we want to see him fight, because there's kind of three people now kind of chucking offers, left, right and centre. And we just want to get him back in the ring, I think, now at this stage, or see what his plans are.
Yeah.
Has he got maybe three big fights left in him?
Yeah. Well, I think he's got two fight deals on the table from each of them, so ESPN, PBC and DAZN. By all accounts, DAZN are offering the most money and there's the most possible matchups, so the common sense move would be to go there. But maybe he wants to go to ESPN and get the recognition he feels he's been denied. You just don't know what's going on, because it seems like a straightforward choice, but there's obviously things going on behind the scenes there. Just last word on Saunders. I can kind of understand the logic, because when he was first supposed to fight Andrade, he was getting the lion's share of the money. That's obviously flipped now because Andrade's got the belt, what with all the drug controversy and whatnot. So Saunders taking the slim cut of the money there, and he's probably thinking, even if I beat Andrade you know, I'm still going to be left out in the cold a little bit. I'm not signed with DAZN. All the other major middleweights are. So that's probably the reasoning behind that, I would have thought. Andy, I know you made a brief trip down to 154 pounds. Did you ever consider jumping up to 168?
Nah, just never happened. I could have, obviously, with the hype, but never went up.
Is that the kind of thing that is dictated by opportunities, really, is it?
No, just like when you think of, like, for me, I would have been, like, at training weight, I would have been like 172, coming down to 160. And most super middleweights become from like 185 to make 168, you know. So when you think about rehydrating after a fight, that I'd only be like 172, and they'd be back up to 160, 185. It's just you know.
I'm good, thanks.
Yeah. Like, you know, they punch hard enough at 60, so.
Yeah, true.
No, I never did, but like it's in one way, as you can see the sense, if he's going to move up, he's going to have a belt, he can still come back down and weight. But in one sense, like, yeah, no one's even heard of this guy he's fighting. Have you ever heard of him before?
Can't
I think he drew two of his first three fights, so that would tell you where he's at. He's fought a heavyweight, he's fought a cruiserweight. Now he's fighting this guy who he's fighting. I don't even know his name, but that's his record. But Billy Joel will you know, give him.
He'll do what he does best in Rocky.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll put a beating on him and take the belt, and then will be a two-weight world champion. And really, that's all he cares about, you know.
In the record books.
Yeah, I don't think he cares too much about the opinions of anybody else.
No, I think we've come to realise that now at this stage. At 168, he probably has an eye on Callum Smith, possibly. He'll also presumably have a keen eye on Saturday's action at the O2, as his former Team GB teammate, James DeGale, takes on former foe Chris Eubank Jr.
I'm going to go in that ring and take me to the next level.
10 times the fighter Eubank is.
I'm going to grind him down. I'm going to dominate him. I'm bringing the heat, as I always do.
Yeah! I'm going now to do the business.
Whoever loses, game over.
Finish. God.
There you have it. So it's James DeGale versus Chris Eubank Jr. on Saturday at the O2 Arena. Being dubbed a bit of a retirement match. Who has more to lose here, Andy, do you think?
Both of them have a huge amount to lose in terms of their credibility and their reputation. In equal measure, I think. I don't think either guy can afford, for their own kind of egos,
they can
afford to lose it. But, you know, this fight came out of, this is another one that was like, it's like the fight we never knew we wanted or needed. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, this is a good fight. I'll enjoy that. Yeah, come on, you two fight. There's no belt. It doesn't mean anything, but you'll have a good build-up and we'll enjoy it. I mean, it will be a good fight. Stylistically, it will be a good fight, and it'll be interesting to see what DeGale has left, if he's up for it, which he should be in terms
of all the opponents DeGale.
Yeah, but he should be. But, like, he's been up for fights before and hasn't done it. You know, it's kind of came in flat. But this is a big one for him, and he can't, like, he, if he loses, he's won a world title. He's won two world titles, I think. Maybe one or two.
He's won two because he lost.
Yeah, he lost to Truex. And so you got to say, man, you can't really say it was a, you know, he didn't fulfill his potential. He beat Anthony Durrell. You know, he's had some huge fights.
Draw
with Badu Jack. Was it a draw?
Yeah, a draw.
Yeah.
That was a vicious fight.
That was a huge fight, like, you know. So he served his time and he's earned his stripes, and he is a champion. He was a champion of the world, like, so. But he shouldn't be losing. If he's anywhere near as good as he is, he shouldn't be losing to Eubank Jr. Mm.
And not that odds mean anything in boxing, because we've learned that over the years, but he is the betting underdog. Is that fair, do you think?
No.
It's a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a strange one. We're worth a few quid, maybe. No, I don't know. Like, if he boxes and keeps it long, it grows already displayed that, like, well, you know what to expect at Eubank. He will come and he will, like, in the first fight with Billy Joe Saunders, he was a bit befuddled. Billy Joe Saunders has this way of mesmerising. Like, you don't realise what you're in against until you're in there with him. He's so much better when you're actually in against him than he is when you're watching him, you know, and I fell foul to that. But you could see that he just got sucked into Billy Joe Saunders. It wasn't until it was too late that he kind of just got back to his game and did what he does best, which is come forward and throw punches viciously. But within the George Groves fight, George shown that if you can be disciplined and box and be defensive within that while jabbing, you can beat him all day, you know. Yeah. But he will come. He can take a good punch and he will come, and you just have to be ready to suck it up.
Yeah, and ironically, Eubank was favoured over Groves by, I think, everyone in Boxing Monthly, the magazine, picked Eubank to beat Groves that day, and the bookies had Eubank favoured as well. So it just shows odds can be askew a lot of the time in boxing. The only reasoning I can possibly see is that Truax and Eubank are quite similar in terms of good engines, come forward, pressure, and Eubank would probably be a level above Truax.
Yeah, well, just in terms of the viciousness, maybe not technically, maybe for not foot-wise, but just in terms of the velocity of the punches and the
volume.
And force, yeah.
Volume has given De Gale trouble over the years. He sometimes freezes when he's getting punches thrown at him. That might be the reasoning, but still, as you said, if he uses his power or uses his size to his advantage, it should be, you know, it should be a comfortable-ish night's work. I expect Eubank to finish strong, but you'd expect De Gale to close it out, wouldn't you?
I think there's so much riding on this fight for both of them that it's going to be a very cagey fight. I don't think we're going to get the barn burner we're hoping for. And I know we were speaking off air, in particular, I just think De Gale is going to jab Eubank Jr. to bits. It's going to be jab, double jab, triple jab the whole way through. The only problem with that is De Gale had shoulder surgery on his right shoulder. So obviously for a southpaw, he might struggle to get as many jabs off as he wants, but I think he's got the discipline and that'll be the game plan. I think Eubank Jr. is just going to charge you and get clipped. Yeah. Kept at range the whole night long, and I fancy De Gale by a pretty wide points decision.
Yeah.
Well, the last time I was in here, I can't remember what I was just trying to think of now. You made a prediction, and I said, you're crazy. Then I told you to get off the couch. Right. What was the one? What was that? Do you remember?
You picked Warrington to beat.
Yeah, you picked Warrington.
I picked him by knockout.
Yeah.
Or by stoppage. Phil actually picked Warrington on points. But yeah, no, you ran me out of the studio.
Likewise. I hold my hands up.
I remember thinking in the first round of that fight when Frampton was a bit wobbly, I was like, geez, this would be the biggest shout ever.
We're never going to live with Simon.
Well, actually, I was in Portugal at the time, so I couldn't watch the fight. I was just watching Twitter. And I was like, oh, wait till I see, I'll get my hands on Andy Lee.
Just a last word on that. It's well publicised that Eubank has done much of his work to date, sort of solo artist, hasn't used a trainer for whatever reason. I know Ronnie Davis is there or thereabouts, but he's never really nailed down a chief cornerman. I think Nate Vasquez from the Mayweather gym is in this time, wouldn't be overly renowned, but do you think it's going to make any sort of tangible difference? Someone to bounce things off?
Just having an outside voice, it might. But he's still going
to
be the same fighter, you know?
Yeah.
You can't talk to somebody who doesn't listen, you know, and you can have all the cornermen in the world in there. I just don't. He's just going to have the same game plan the whole way through, I think.
Mm. He was with Adam for two or three fights, and it was always a struggle. Always a struggle. Like you said, doesn't really listen, and then just doesn't listen and does his own thing, and it was always a struggle for Adam to coach him.
Not to get into his character, is that like a prima donna thing, or is it just his personality that
he's kind of been programmed that way from his dad, that to kind of have this ignorance and he is a warrior, you know, he is a tough man, and that's kind of what's built in, that they're supremely confident in that. It comes across as arrogant, but I just think that's just his attitude. He's kind of been from a young age with his dad, that he's been kind of shaped this way, that if we'd come into the gym, he'd be training and I'd be training, and Adam would always keep us time separate, but we'd cross over, when I'm finishing, he'd be coming in, and we'd just say hello, and there would be no chat, you know, he wouldn't, and he would only really say hello to me, because I was a boxer, and I'm not sure, I was obviously a champion at the time, but most of the people in the gym, he wouldn't even acknowledge, he'd just come in, and not that he would keep to himself, but he would be just wouldn't even, wasn't a nice guy, but that's his approach, you know, this is the fight game, it's not about being nice guys. So
what you see is what you get. It's not an act.
It's
cameras are off, we say the same.
And the dad's the same, that's not an act, you know, when you see him being so flamboyant, and you know, that's just him as well,
He's also signed up with Al Haymon now. I think it's a 3-fight deal, and De Gale's obviously signed, so he's covering himself both ways there, Al. But the thing that made Eubank such a tough out at middleweight was that relentlessness we talked about, the physicality. But that's kind of negated at super middleweight, because as we saw, Groves just sort of manhandled him a little bit.
Yeah, but he kept coming, he was always dangerous against Groves. But as a middleweight, who did he beat? You know,
And I respect the dad because he did bring him along right. He matched him right. He took his time with him, you know. But
funny, yeah,
he hasn't beat a really quality operator, you know.
I was looking at his
Blackwell is a good fighter. He was a good fighter, yeah. You know. That was a win, but it was obviously a brutal fight, you know, and it had a terrible outcome. But
the moves is 168 seemed premature. He never he lost to Saunders and just sort of threw his toys out of the pram a little bit. I know he tried to rebuild with Adam, but. Moving to 168 for Arthur Abraham, Yildirim, and then ends up fighting Groves. It just doesn't seem to be any career plan. I take your point that...
Yeah, he had an opportunity. He could have stepped in and fought Golovkin when Kell Brook fought him. That was a huge opportunity to go into that next level and become a world-level fighter. Because once you're given that platform, you kind of you establish yourself there. And then, but he just didn't fancy it. Didn't fancy it. But, I know they wanted, it was the money, probably was the stumbling block. They wanted huge money. And one of the things that the father wanted in the contract was that Sky hire Barry McGuigan as a commentator because Barry McGuigan was always fair to them, you know? This is the type of things that, this is what it was coming down to. To this kind of level of pettiness. So, he had a huge opportunity, but now he's kind of here. If he loses this fight, he can forget being taken seriously again, you know, at any sort of level. Because it's getting a bit late in the day for him in terms of his age, and he can only go to the well so many times before... You only have so many opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we brought up George Groves' name a couple of times, and as content a retiree as you could possibly see, his statement seemed sincere, and you see his interviews, he seems sort of relieved to have the pressure off him, but... He's going to be in the commentary team this weekend, and needless to say, whoever wins is going to be calling him out.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be the shortest retirement in history?
He would take both those fights, and I think he'd win both those fights. I think he'll stay retired. I think the only person he came out for retirement for is a third crack at Carl Froch. But I think,
might happen on the streets.
I think he retired and even said it specifically to piss the Gael off, you know, in the build-up to the fight.
Yeah.
So he's doing what Amir Khan's doing to Kell Brook, just pissing him off all the time. And I think he'll stay retired.
Think he's happily retired, Andy?
I think so, yeah. And he's beaten them both. What's it to go back for? You know, what's it to go back for?
Yeah. That's actually a pretty decent card at the O2, in fairness to some pay-per-views, so make your own decision on that. But Anthony Kakachi's in action. There's also a decent test for Joe Joyce in the form of Bermain Stiverne. Obviously seen better days, but still, decent name for his record. And Lee Selby's looking to rebuild from that loss to Josh Warrington, jumping up from featherweight to lightweight, skipping the super featherweight division. I always like Lee Selby, and I know the weight excuse, to use inverted commas, is thrown around a bit that he drained the weight or whatever, but he did look genuinely... that it was one fight too many at featherweight.
Yeah, well, you don't jump up 2 weights after a loss unless the weight actually did affect you. Now, he never used it as an excuse, but the evidence is there. He was a very good featherweight, but when you're coming against a prime Warrington who suits the weight and he's possibly sucking a bit in to get down there, it affected him maybe in the last couple of rounds of the fight, and he just said, you know what, just call it as it is and go up to something a little easier to cut down to.
You a fan of Lee Selby, Andy?
I am. He's a kind of precarious talent, isn't he? Him and his brother Andrew, they're kind of training Barry by kind of on their own. Frankie Bogg is their coach, but they're talented. You can see that, you know. But they kind of have their own style. That they some of it's American kind of Floyd Mayweather-esque, and some of it's just their own kind of a style, a unique style. And it'll be interesting. He's been a world champion. He was IBF champion. So we'll see if he can do that now at the new weight. And if he can continue, you know, some of it's a lot of time it comes down to desire as well and how hungry you are. But I think, you know, the weight wasn't an issue in that fight. But Warrington's probably, after seeing him in the flesh against Frampton, he's hugely underrated. You know, even by me going into the Frampton fight, I didn't give him any of the credit that he deserves because I think he he could be the best at the weight on his day, you know? He could be the best featherweight out there because his style, his engine, and how he fights, it's just very hard to combat.
Mm. And he seems to be punching harder.
Mm.
Well, I don't know if that's something you can necessarily work on.
No, but just that he sits so low in the exchanges and he just swings his punches. And like when he was hurting Frampton, he was hitting him up on around the temple. And you don't have to be a big puncher, like especially early in a fight. Mm. And you remember, like, Frampton came to the ring first. That would have been totally out of his comfort zone as well, because he was used to being the champion in the home fight. He came to the ring first. And he was in the ring for quite a while because he has like an elaborate ring entrance warrant. And so that he was probably getting cold while he was waiting. And then the first exchange is a ferocious one. And like, that fight could have been so different if just those first two rounds had been different. You know, it was all dependent on those first two rounds. He kind of lost the fight front and lost in those two rounds.
Yeah.
He started cold in the second fight against Santa Cruz as well. Mm. And he just couldn't. He even said it himself. He just didn't catch up. So, and he would have been in the ring first for that one, wouldn't he? So maybe it's just a...
That was more of a tactical thing that night.
Yeah, he did. To me, he got the tactics wrong. They didn't adjust to the jabbing or the
step. Expected it to be round 13, yeah. And Santa Cruz fought a totally different fight.
And adjustments, yeah.
And Santa Cruz fought last weekend, beat Rafael Rivera over 12 rounds, himself and Frampton. One apiece. Is that a fight we'd like to see?
It's the only fight, isn't it, really?
Well, he ran through a list of names. He went Valdez, Gary Russell, Josh Warrington, and then a third fight with Carl Frampton. So in his mind, Frampton's the fourth option.
Then Frampton said, so sometimes when you lose a fight, you're likely to get a fight, whether it be Valdez or Santa Cruz, because he's seen as weakened now, you know, and probably won't have any negotiating power. He'll have to take a fight, what's offered to him. And he's still a huge name, and still a huge fighter, a huge talent, and like if he's up for it, the only thing that concerns me is hearing him speak. He seems a little bit deflated, doesn't he? I'm not sure what your opinion is. He seems a little bit deflated, and he shouldn't be, because those first two rounds go slightly different. He doesn't stand and hold his feet in that first two rounds, and in the first round, if he moves and boxes like he can, the fight could have been completely different. He could be champion now.
Yeah.
So he's just got to recapture his confidence and look at the fight again in the cold light of day and say, like, I see where my mistakes are, and don't let that take away from who he is as a fighter, you know? Mm.
And deflation is the right word, because after the fight, it did seem like he was sort of at the end of his tether a little bit. And if he's not the greatest Irish fighter ever, he's in the conversation.
He is probably. Yeah. No, he's up there. He is, from terms of achievements and what he's done, he is.
And, like, I sort of concluded at the end of the year that he probably was going to call it a day, but there has seemed to be a little bit, he seems a little bit revitalised. I don't know if it's something in training or they've seen something on tape. And to Andy's point, sometimes when you're defeated, the opportunities come up. I remember when Carl Fratch lost Andre Ward and was written off, he got a fight with Lucien Boutte and blew him away. So these things happen. You just never know. And last point on Warrington, himself against Oscar Valdez might be one of the best fights that can be made in boxing.
What do you think about him against Barry Kid Galahad? Yeah,
I think it's a tougher one than people aren't giving Kid Galahad enough credit. I think he's got an awkward style, and he's in the Who Needs Him club, sort of. Not a huge draw, but
he's not a huge draw that it's on terrestrial TV and not pay-per-view as well.
Well, I think that's another ply by Frank Warren, as I said to earlier, to now put the finger up at Matchroom, because any show that they have is now seen, any real world title fight seems to be pay-per-view, and this is one where he's saying, you know, he's making a serious point of saying that this is going to be on terrestrial, not even terrestrial, subscription.
That's right, sorry,
BT,
subscription.
So you're still paying for it.
just go back to Santa Cruz there. Just on one thing, he threw 1,273 punches in that fight against Rivera.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Awesome. Like, he averages 1,000. Even that's above average.
1,273 punches he threw.
It's crazy. His physique sort of defies his style, doesn't he? Yeah. He likes to get low and fight in the inside, even though
he's tall and rangy.
It seemed from the Frampton rematch that might suit him better, but he's 30 now, he's sort of dead in that. That's the hand he goes with, so.
I didn't see the fight, but I see like the last 10, 15 seconds was shown there. And it wasn't like, he might be through 1,000 punches, but it's like he's not throwing any power in any of those shots, is it?
They had a last 10 second standoff brawl, and I don't think if any of them landed, anyone was going down, but it was still great to watch.
I think that's just about our lot for today. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks to producer Tom as well. We'll be back next week. We'll chat to you then.